Call the Board of Supervisors meeting for September 25th, 2019 to order at 8:45 on the clock. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Open Meetings Act is on the wall to our left. Attendance by observation, Jurgens, Thiemann, Dorn, Byers, and Lytle. On the consent agenda, approve general agenda, approve minutes of the meeting held September 11, 2019, approve all claims through September 25, 2019, in the amount of $5,160,584.84, accept claim number 1909-0173, to Beatrice Lawn Care in the amount of $406, and claim number 1909-0308 to Hard Rock Quarries in the amount of $6,657.60 to be voted on separately below. Number four, approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve receiving treasurer's list of delinquent taxes on parcels of real estate in the county which remain unsold for want of bidders. Directing the county treasurer to issue county tax sales certificates. Approve verifying sheriff's distress warrant report. Approve canceling check number 18120101 to Charm Tex Inc. in the amount of $115.80. Approve specs and call for bids on culvert projects referred to as Gage County ER-CP-3242 and C-34-1158. Between Section 36, Township 5 North, Range 6 East, and Sections 1 and 6, Township 4 North, Range 6 and 7 East. Bids to be opened on October 23rd, 2019 at 9:30. Approved utility permit number 1138, Windstream, Nebraska, LLC. They will be removing old pedestal and setting new pedestal 20 foot east, entrenching 2 inch wide, 5 foot deep, 12-pair cable from the new pedestal for 436 feet to residents on north side of East London Road, located in the southeast quarter section 21, Township 3 North, Range 7 East, Rockford Township. Approved utility permit number 1139, Windstream, Nebraska, LLC. It will be boring 2-inch diameter, 5-foot below the bottom of ditch under the county road for 66 feet to run an SEB 2X24B cable to provide service to residents at 5188 Southwest 72nd Road, located in the southeast quarter section 23 and southwest quarter section 24, Township 6 North, Range 5 East, Claytonia Township. Approved declaring 2002 pickup, Chevrolet pickup, VIN number 1GCCS19562822774. As surplus and selling on Purple Wave Auction.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Jurgens, second by Byers. Any discussion?
I would ask a question, why are we canceling the checks for Charm Tex?
They said that they received payment for it, so I don't know if somebody else paid it. It's to do with a prisoner payment, so sometimes they get money from somewhere else.
Okay.
So I wasn't going to argue with him.
Like to have somebody pay all our bills.
I know it. Kind of what I'm thinking.
Anything else? Vote. Six in favor, motion carries. Five in favor, motion carries.
Six, they keep counting.
Nope.
Oh,
yeah. We need to turn John's.
Somebody be voting against or something. Up next, regular agenda. Approve or disapprove claim number 1909-0173 to Beatrice Lawn Care in the amount of $406. And claim number 1909-0308 to Hard Rock Quarries, LLC in the amount of $6,657.60. This brings the total of claims approved through September 25th, 2019 to $5,167,648.44. Those are two of my companies. The total looks so high on the total claims because of the second Beatrice 6 payment, as well as some other transfers that are internal.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? Moved by Juergens, second by Lytle. Vote. 4 in favor with Thiemann abstaining. Motion carries. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Everyone's on the agenda, so we'll move on. Committee reports, building and ground, winter lights.
Baby is on vacation. I talked to Rosie and she doesn't have anything, so I think we're all in good shape. Nothing new.
All right. Equalization.
We're trying to keep everything equal.
A little bit of stuff going to Turk, several of them, but very little. Finance and insurance.
Large ticket items. Byron Medical Center, inmate medical, $10,848.39. City Beatrice, quarterly EMS, inmate medical, $45,197. Dell Marketing LP, Sheriff Jail Computers, $12,562.54. Gage County transfers to 9/11 Economic Development Road Judgment Fund. Don, do you have a breakdown on that right offhand or not?
On
those four transfers?
The dollar amounts?
Yeah. They're combined into one.
I can tell you like three of them was $475,000. One of them was $175,000. Two of them were $175,000.
I mean as far as the judgment funds and as
far as $1.9 million of that is for judgment.
Okay.
And then the rest are all transfers.
That's fine. Yep. Lamo Plumbing supplies for sheriff remodel $20,000. Sheriff, Washington County Sheriff, inmate boarding medical $14,105.74, Beatrice concrete sand and gravel rock and gravel $32,905.61, Sapp Brothers fuel road department
$24,774.10.
I guess I see it on the back page.
Yeah.
I'll break that down.
One of the things that I will mention, though, when you asked that question was part of the transfer, because I'm transferring dollars from the general fund into the judgment fund,
right.
Then we're paying out. So that it's kind of doubled up, so that's why there's a large amount.
The breakdown is $1.9 million to the Beatrice 6, Engage, $37,196. I don't see that amount. Do you know what that is on?
It was, I think, $500,000.
$500,000.
That's it. I can say that'll be our second payment to the Beatrice 6 in the amount of $1.9 million. Human resources, employee relations. Didn't really have anything on that. Law enforcement, emergency management. I know Lisa's gone today. She's finishing up the FEMA for incident 4420. Sheriff?
You got something over there? Well, I'm going to let you know, I think yesterday and today are testing and certifications for the canine handler. So hopefully we'll get that done out of the way and hopefully see you here this week or next week, and we'll kind of go from there. So, nothing else. The death they found about the same time, so I don't know how that's going to affect the last couple of days, but anyway, they're about the end of the course. So, hope you do well.
Road and bridge.
Eric has stated that. Send for some EDA money, possibly for some funding on the Claytonia Bridge. So we're looking into that. attended a visit with the CAT representative, expressed our concerns, and I think he understands the problem we've been having. So hopefully that'll improve. There is a new gravel pit, dry gravel pit, that will be, I think, this week, opening up south of Hollenburg. Hopefully, and it'll be efficiently run, the way I can see. Hopefully, we'll be able to get another supplier for gravel, which will hopefully reduce our costs some. We'll see, but I think it's going to be a good pit, from what I see, similar to the one at Fairbury that BF Country has. It's like to say it's not a horse gravel, but I've had many comments from a lot of township officials that the quality of gravel we're receiving now is probably the best they've ever seen for a long time. So if we're into a good vein by Fairbury, or is must be able to be there, they're cleaning a better one of the two. So I think the quality is there, a lot of large material in it. So hopefully that should help our base, and this is the year we need something out there. So
is the distance about the same between the two?
For us, it would be closer. For Gage County, it would be closer overall. I would guess closer, yes, or for Holland. So that's a good thing. That's all I got.
I did have a couple of complaints, phone calls about the weeds growing up around our garage in Adams, and went over there to take a look, and we do have some stuff going around that needs to be cut down. So anyway, I had complaints. Followed through on them, and hopefully, Galen, you can get them cut down. I think our extension office would do that for us. But.
I think they have.
Practice makes perfect.
Good thing. Anything else for Road Bridge? Move on to our first honored guest, Jeremy Behrens. He will be leaving us.
The honored guest.
Good morning.
Mark, thank you. Well, yeah, so today I'm here to make everyone aware that as of September 1st, I was promoted to a position in our administrative office in Lincoln. And Ashley Grease, who was the former chief deputy in District 1, has been promoted to chief probation officer. So I remember when I very first started, I came here and talked to all of you, and I thought that really helped kind of bridge the gap with communication, and I want that. That's really important. So wanted to take advantage of coming here today to do all that. So thank you for the time. Before Ashley comes up, I just wanted to thank you guys all for your support. I know you've had a very unique set of circumstances when crafting the budget and things like that, and your support of probation has really been fantastic. It's been really great. So I thank you all for your support. Relationships are very important to our office. It'll be really important to Ashley, and having a good working relationship with the counties that we serve, especially Gage, is extremely important. So I thank you for that. You've all been fantastic to work with. Don, I want to thank you. You've been great to work with. I know I probably bugged the heck out of you my first year calling you on how to do the budget, making sure we're doing everything right. Thank you for that. Roger, you've been great to work with as well, your office. Appreciate everything that you've done. And then Sheriff Gustafson, I want to thank you and your office as well. Been fantastic to work with. So, obviously a little sad to see people. But Ashley is a really good leader, and I know she'll have good aims. So, sorry. just care about this community quite a bit. Grew up in the area, have a lot of family in the area, and it's not that I'm never going to be here again, but it's bittersweet. So,
well, thank you for all you've done. I've been down to visit your office a number of times, and you've always been very friendly and outgoing and helping me understand what you do. And so we appreciate everything that you've done. Thank you, and good luck in the future.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So I'll hand it off to Ashley.
Thank you very much.
Good morning.
Ashley, can we have you spell your last name for us?
Yep, it is G-R-I-E-S-S. And I have some handouts here, so I'll pass these out for you. Good morning. Thank you for allowing us some time so that I could come meet with you and introduce myself. I just wanted to take a little bit of time to kind of talk about probation and share some data that relates to Gage County and what we're seeing with the probation population here. So my name is Ashley Grease. Prior to this, I was the Chief Deputy Probation Officer in the district, and before that I was a field officer, so I've had some years of experience being in the community and helping serve with this population. You'll see in front of you I have some handouts, so I'll just kind of refer to this throughout. To start with, the vision and mission statement. So this is just to kind of tell you what we're all about in probation. We provide programming that's based off of evidence-based practices, so programming that we know is proven to work. We create constructive change through collaboration, rehabilitation, and partnership to enhance safe communities. If you pull up your next handout of the state, in the bottom right corner, it has a layout of District 1, so I just wanted to share this with you so you have an idea of what the coverage area looks like of what we serve. We are made up of 10 counties, those being Fillmore, Thayer, Saline, Jefferson, Gage, Johnson, Pawnee, Nemaha, Richardson, and Odo County. Just to give a little rundown on our district, we have 42 staff members in total. In the year 2018, we served 1,790 clients. We serve 3 district judges and 6 county and juvenile court judges. We work pretty closely with the region for behavioral health services. We also do crossover work with multiple DHHS jurisdictions. Probation works pretty closely with law enforcement, treatment providers, educators, attorneys, and court staff. On the next handout, you'll see who serves your county. So I just wanted to give a brief rundown on who all in our district helps to serve this county here in Gage. So on the left you'll see are some probation officers and also our support staff that help make up the county here. On the right is our management team. Not all of them are positioned here in Gage County, but they do help serve the area. They also serve the rest of the district as well. A couple of things that I'll point out here is the Chief Deputy Probation Officer position. That's currently vacant, as that was my former position, so that's a position that we're working on getting filled right now. And then also the Reporting Center Coordinator is currently vacant, right? Marty Metschke was the former person filling that position, and he's moving to being a drug court officer within our district.
Question, I see as you go clear over into Odo County, do you do any of the probation out of the detention center over there?
We do work pretty closely, so the detention center is located in Sarpy County, but we do work pretty closely with Sarpy County. We have a detentions alternative initiative over in Odo County specifically, and so it's more looking at the alternatives, but we do work pretty closely with the Sarpy County Juvenile Justice Center.
I wondered if you'd have some pressure there on those people coming out of that center. Okay.
Yeah, and with us being close by there, it works pretty well. Just the judge is pretty supportive of that county. So if we get into a situation where a youth, based off of our assessment screening, needs to be placed, then Sarpy County works pretty well with us on that.
I think we could get them to kick in some money into our probation department. So I'm being facetious.
Yeah. Any other questions so far? Okay. So the next part here, I just want to kind of break down some data for you to share what it looks like here in Gage County and what you're seeing with our population. So Gage County in 2018 is when this data was pulled. So for the year 2018, we served a total of 523 clients. 90 of those clients were juvenile, and 433 of those clients were adults. The next slide that you see starts to break down the demographics. So on the left side, you'll see the juvenile age population, and the highest population that we're seeing is the age 17, and then you'll see the breakdown from there. With the adult side, the highest number of clients that we're seeing population-wise is between the range of 21 and 30.
Are we still seeing the primary issue with these individuals is drug issues? And
substance abuse is common for the underlying factors. So there's usually something else that's tied to that, but substance is directly related to that in some way.
That's where it has been.
The next slide pulls the race. So predominantly for both juvenile and for adults, it's white for population. And then for ethnicity, being non-Hispanic for both adult and juvenile is primary what we're seeing. For gender, for both juvenile and adult, you'll see that primarily we have more males than we do females. So on the juvenile side, 67% males and 33% female, and then on the adult side, 68% male and 32% female.
I do, as I look at the front page of the Beatrice Daily Sun, I see more and more women being photographed and see them being arrested and their charges.
Yeah,
I see more and more women.
It will be interesting to see 2018 what the projection will look like there. All right, next I just wanted to kind of briefly run down what we offer for adult services in District 1. So you'll see this handout here where it says adult services available for access. So this gives a brief rundown on the left side of some treatment services and other services that we utilize for our adult population. Some treatment services, both at outpatient and residential level, are both for substance abuse and for mental health. So it might be intensive outpatient treatment. It might be going for a short-term residential to deal with substance use. We also utilize GPS and radio frequency, so that electronic monitor, knowing where clients are in certain cases. We have different programming classes, cognitive groups that really get to the client's thinking process and processing through those thinking errors. And then you'll also see on the right side is a breakdown of where our dollars went for the state of Nebraska for vouchers. So it gives a rundown over there of the total amount that we spent, the state of Nebraska spent for vouchers, and it gives a breakdown of what that went to. The SUD is substance use. So in total, that was $60,895. The state of Nebraska pays for services through the vouchers, and those are just issued by District 1 officers. Many of our clients, we've learned, don't have the resources always to be able to access those services, and these are important changing, behavior changing programs, and we don't want that lack of services to get in the way of the client being able to access that. The reporting center. We have a reporting center located here in Beatrice, and you'll see the next handout gives a rundown of the classes that we offer through our reporting center. I'm not going to go through all of these in depth, but just to give you an idea, this is a rundown of what we are currently utilizing at our reporting center. I will highlight a few of the core programs that we currently offer. One being Relapse Prevention Group. Relapse Prevention Group is a group that's designed to help clients that struggle with substance use. We also have a Trauma Resolution Group. The Trauma Resolution Group is for men or for women, and we're finding that clients are coming to us with a lot of trauma in their past, so this is a way for them to go through programming to work on some of that trauma.
In your trauma, we see, and we're seeing a lot of news reporting on suicide attempts and those people who are successful. Is that dealt with in the trauma resolution or through this in any way? Because I can see these people being very, very vulnerable.
Yeah, that's a good question. So a lot of the underlying mental health that sometimes leads to, unfortunately, suicide, that is something that is being looked at and being addressed through this type of program.
Okay, I hope so. I hope we can do everything we can to help those individuals.
Yeah. And I will mention, on some of these it says closed group, and some of them it says open group. So if it's a closed group, when that group starts, new clients can't come in until that group is done. So once when a new group would start, then that person could get added to that list. The open group, people can join at any time. And the other one that I'll highlight is dialectical behavioral therapy. That is a cognitive group program that we utilize to really address some of those thinking errors in our clients. And that's designed for our high-risk population. With all of these group programs, we contract through the state with agencies so that they provide the services. It is of no cost to our clients, and it is open to the community. We do give preference to our clients first, and then if there's spots that's open, then anybody in the community could come and partake in that programming. For juvenile services, I'll give a brief rundown of that. Similar to the adult services, there's a lot of options for what our youth and families have access to through probation. All of our programming that we utilize is based off of evidence-based practices. So we offer different types of substance abuse and mental health treatment, both at the outpatient level and at the inpatient level. We utilize other services like electronic monitoring. We have a tracker where maybe if somebody struggles with truancy of youth, that there's the tracker would go into the school and ensure that they're going to school. They help go to the house and ensure that they're getting there. And you'll see a breakdown on the right side of the vouchers that we have utilized to help the youth and the family access those services. So again, we don't want any sort of barriers to interfere with that youth being able to get into some of that positive change programming that's really going to help them be successful. We also see that transportation can sometimes be a barrier in a rural area like this. So that's something that we have access to through the state for vouchers to help assist the family in making sure that they're able to make it to the services that they have.
The HOSP, PRTF, what does PRTF stand for?
That is a treatment placement. So that would be to address both substance use and mental health. So it's more of a long-term placement that the youth has access to.
The HOSP stands for what?
Say that again.
The HOSP, H-O-S-P, stands for what?
It's hospitalized.
Okay.
Yeah. So we just have a couple within the state of Nebraska. And those are coming from recommendations from our treatment providers. So if we send a youth to go get an evaluation done, and that recommendation for that placement, that specific placement is coming from that, then they would go into that program. A couple things I wanted to point out. So in 2018, Gage County had 23 youth working with probation that were placed in some sort of an out-of-home placement. And then I also wanted to highlight that in 2018, we completed 25 juvenile intakes for Gage County. So this would be when law enforcement calls us and they think that a youth needs to be detained, that we go and we assess the situation. We have a screening instrument that we utilize to help us determine what would be the best option and also taking into consider other factors. So that's what that number is coming from. All right. Drug testing. Drug testing is something that we utilize with both our adult and some with our juvenile population. With our juveniles, we try not to have them interacting with adults, so a lot of that's more officer driven, but that's something that we're looking at increasing in the future and trying to find a solution there. For the year 2018, 5,363 tests were administered in Gage County.
Wow.
So yeah,
wow.
Big number. And then I just wanted to highlight recidivism rates both for adults and for juveniles. And this is specific for Gage County. So recidivism in this sense is defined as the risk to reoffend. With the adult population here, it says that 79% of them were successful here in Gage County. What that is being based on is not receiving a new law violation within the first 3 years of being released from probation. So that's where that data is coming from. And that's as of September 16th of this year. For the juvenile population, it is 70% success rate. And that is being looked at from 1 year after completing their term of probation. I just wanted to share this data with you because I know that it relates to the bottom line of what we're all interested in, creating that positive behavior change and helping provide safer communities. Thank you for card. Feel free to reach out at any time if you ever have any questions. And I know, Myers, you said that you've been by the office. I would welcome any of you if you want to ever stop by the office. I'd love to show you around. So, and I'll open it up if there's any questions.
What you do is tremendous, and we're very glad you're taking over. Good luck.
Thank you.
Let us know if we can help you in any way. The poor service we had before is... I'm being facetious.
Yeah.
Ashley, no, it's nice to meet you, and I'm sure there will be people coming down. Jeremy, I want to thank you, too. I remember you coming on, and the office has really grown around you. It's a completely different look than when you started, and a lot of that was from your hard work. And there's a lot of benefits to our area. Obviously, having a reporting center and the probation here, we amortize those costs out over other counties, but we get a lot of extra benefit, not just in probation, but jobs and services as well. And it's from the outside, from a distance, thank goodness from a distance, seeing that grow, I really do. I want to thank you, and we're sad to see you leave.
Enjoyed working with you, and over the course of your service, things have changed a lot from Lincoln as far as your duties and obligations under probation. It's not been easy, and you've worked us through a lot of that. Look forward to working with your successor. We've already had discussions. You know, that's what I appreciate. When we have an issue, we talk about it and get it resolved. I thank you for that.
Thank you.
And you look at the numbers you're working with, I don't think the average person, including me, has any idea of the number of individuals you work with, juvenile and adult. And what you do is fantastic.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good
luck.
You.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks, Jeremy. Up next, Sandy Morrissey, Director of Regional Prevention Coordination, RPC. She'll be presenting information regarding funding and the development of the prevention system of Region 5.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I do have a handout also. And I didn't think about it when I came in, but Don, you're getting chocolate from Marty. And if I thought of it, I would have brought some for you guys.
Well, I'm coming up to sign contracts tomorrow afternoon, so Marty better have
fun. Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So with those of you I haven't met, I'm Sandy Morrissey, the Prevention Director at Region 5 Systems. And every year I come and do an update in regards to the work we've done with our federal block grant funds. I think I'm going to start first, though, Denny, since probation, she did such a nice job, to kind of fill you in on our suicide prevention, because it ties in closely with probation and our network services with mental health providers. So, unfortunately, within our region, we are highest in the state with suicide rates among 15 to 24-year-olds. Due to that, we... are the only region, along with the Policy Center, the Department of Education, and the State Suicide Prevention Coalition, that will receive more funding. We just finished 10 years with Garrett Lee Smith, and it was about $63,000 coming into each region to address suicide issues. We'll be getting $150,000 for the next 5 years. So part of the work that's being done with those dollars, AMSR is assessing and managing suicide risk. So we have, throughout our network providers, including probation, they can come to that to make sure that with each client they're doing an assessment, and that assessment, which they always do anyway, but it's inclusive of suicide, ideation, previous attempts, current history. And then we're really going to work on zero suicide. Meaning that even while they're in treatment, probation, whatever, that there will be follow-through. If there's been suicide ideation, if there's been attempts, if there's been family history. really helping that individual in terms of looking at other options and building on their self-regulation, helping them with resources that can come in. So we're doing a lot within Gage County with suicide prevention. We have Hope Squads. I'll tell you, we've got a middle school counselor within Gage Public, or Beatrice Public, that we use her even as a speaker. She does a really nice job with her Hope Squads with junior high kids. So we're going to build on Hope Squads. We've got about 50 trainers throughout our region that are able to do QPR. That's question, persuade, refer. It's about an hour training. And it's open for community at large. We provide that in-house at the region every other month. And then the closing months, we offer mental health first aid for youth and adults. So we're trying to do a lot within suicide. And I'll keep you posted with the dollars as they come up. Other things we'll be doing. So the packet you have in front of you, the top sheet is the federal block grant funds that we put out annually. Every year the coalitions have to reapply for those funds. In that top section, you'll see $6,500 and where Gage County chose to put those dollars. Your coalition lead, Christina Lyons. So there, some goes towards leadership. I'm telling you, it's paying off tenfold. It's almost like throughout all the coalitions, with giving them a small stipend, we're not having to do benefits, we don't have the overhead, and it's not a full employee. So we're really, throughout the region, paying for almost just one employee with that stipend. Teammates, about 2,000 is going into it. They're revamping that program here in Beatrice, really wanting it to be not youth being referred, but youth that are requesting a teammate. I will tell you in the future, the state and actually federal level, 60% of our funding has to go into evidence-based programming. We're at that level within our region. But I do see in time, and Christine and I have talked, teammates probably won't take that amount of funding. They are not viewed at as evidence-based. Big Brothers, Big Sisters is a national organization, and that's evidence-based. Teammates has not gone down that road. You have your prescription drug take-back, some youth activities, media, which means they put in positive social norming campaigns, the alcohol inspections that law enforcement does locally, and then some training dollars available for the coalition at large. That midsection, if I have any funding not spent by another county, I open that up to counties and say, what would you put it towards? And so Christina had said mental health first aid, actually getting trained as a trainer. And then the bottom is the multi-county strategies. Throughout the region, each county coalition has been involved with these, and we continue to build on it. Within our schools, we have Second Step. It's a social-emotional learning curriculum. And within Gage, this year, you'll have two more evidence-based programs coming in. Third Millennium, which is an online either alcohol or marijuana program, being well utilized through LPS School District with middle and high school, and they are finding the results of the pre and post are phenomenal. The pre-test shows the kids have about 30% knowledge base. The post-tests are showing over 90%, and the kids that don't have over 90%, they can almost select that those are the kids they've been having significant problems with. So it'll be interesting as we gather that data with engagement.
Is that mandatory then?
It's mandatory. Well, in Lancaster, what they're doing, if the youth has a charge, the county attorney, if they actually hold that child accountable, will pay for Third Millennium. LPS says even if they aren't charged with it, we want them to go through. Gage County, they're trying, I think we'll see it at SCC College for kids with just infractions, but through the school systems here, I think they're going to put it into a health class and make it mandatory for all. So that'll be some interesting data. So total coming in for federal block grant is actually over 11,000 for Gage County. And then we have the suicide funds that I just told you about. But Gage County also, three counties received Partnership for Success, Lancaster, Gage, and Southeast Health District area, which is serving five counties. So that's where they're going to put in those two other evidence-based programs, Third Millennium and All Stars. So So you'll have a group of teachers or counselors trained in All Stars this October 8th. And that program is for junior high, and it will include parents. So they'll have a component within school. There's take-home for conversation between, and it's things the kids have to return worksheets. Actually, are you having those conversations with your parents about alcohol drugs, about behavior, about consequences, that kind of thing? So Gage is in the entire, all schools within Gage, all four schools are invested. The second sheet is our Youth Action Board. It's the first year since I've been on since 2003. We don't have a Gage rep.
Yes, that's my question.
I know, mine too. So our kids are on it. It's also the first year where it's all girls except one guy. He can hold his own, but it's interesting having an all-girl board. And so they'll work diligently to get the few counties that aren't on.
Oh, it'll be much better being an all-girl board, always is.
Well, they wanted lavender T-shirts, and I looked at Connor, and he said, I'll go with it. It's okay. So now we're calling them the Lavender Girls and Connor.
Okay.
So the following, the third piece, every 2 years we do the SHARP survey. It's in partnership with the Center for Disease Control. They do a tobacco survey, a youth risk survey. They select the schools and the classroom where they do that. Once those selections are made, our Nebraska Risk and Protective Factor Student Survey is done in all other classrooms. But remember, this is based on principal approval of doing the survey, or school district superintendent, and it varies throughout our region who makes that decision. And it also is based on just 8th, 10th, and 12th graders. Within your area, the first two sheets kind of show you the demographics. Out of a little over 700 students in the 8th, 10th, and 12th grade throughout Gage County, you had over 400 take it. You're comparable to many of our other counties. We had more take it from the 8th and 10th grade. It lowered in the senior year. And I'm really going to work on that. I'm not sure why the schools are allowing less seniors to take it. Some of it may be they're only in school half days working. I'm not quite sure. I was surprised to see that this year, the lower number of seniors among several of our counties. I'm not going to go graph by graph with you, but if you turn to page 24, you've kind of got a snapshot. It's the very second to the last page of what we're looking at. And quite honestly, Gage County has done a nice job lowering numbers consistently with their substance use, lower than the statewide level. We're still above the national level. So it talks in that first square on page 24, lifetime use. If you jump down to past 30-day use, and you'll see comparison data from 2010 to 2018, we've gone down with alcohol in actually all three grades, 8th, 10th, and 12th. When you look at the binge drinking, again, we've gone down in all three areas. Marijuana, down in all three areas. And I will tell you that we're starting to see a bit of a spike in the rural communities with the marijuana. School personnel is starting to get concerned. And some of that's with the vaping. So I know you've probably heard what's happening nationally with that. Massachusetts shut it down for 4 months due to the number of concerned deaths. I wish they would. I could catch them on the national level and say, don't say just e-cigarettes. Kids that are juuling, that is an e-cigarette. They don't think it is. They'll say, I don't have an e-cigarette. I just have a Juul. And we're trying to tell them it's the same thing. So some of our work with that locally will be to help kids understand that. But we're having an increase with the containers that hold either the tobacco or to be reused, and THC will be put in that. And they can show you how to do it on YouTube. So they're filling it with THC oil, and if they're getting it off the street, they don't know what's included in that. And the THC oil, you can't really smell. So I have I have huge concerns. I hope nationally with it happening that we see it move quickly. Maybe we learned our lesson with tobacco and it moved quickly. So, and prescription drugs, we just aren't there yet. Our opioid funds, we struggle with using them because I'm doing a lot of media. We do have Narcan available for all law enforcement, first responders. We can reimburse $75 per kit. It's a nasal spray. We've had some luck with law enforcement, got it about 2 years ago from hospitals in our area, and then it expires after about 18 to 24 months. So I'm assuming we're going to get more requests for Narcan to have that available for the first responders as well as if they come upon the scene. I'd really like school nurses to hold it. Most schools are pretty apprehensive about doing that. They say, well, first responders can get here in about 5 minutes, and that could be too late. So we'll see what happens as time goes on. Perhaps as we do more education, people will get more comfortable with it. And the final piece I want to talk about on this sheet, if you look at age of first use, 12 or younger, if you look at 2010 compared to 2018, we have high rates with those eighth graders in terms of drinking alcohol. This is what helps us drive our strategies. We have school personnel telling us the anxiety and depression among the younger kids is up in numbers. And I think that's why we see some of the suicide. I think that's why we see the early use. I think that's something we have to work at. And if you look down one more box, experience with families, help for personal problems, that's pretty significant, and I see that across the region. Those numbers are pretty typical. But then the next one, discuss dangers of alcohol. It's not even half our parents throughout those grades still doing it. And comments are made like, if we have a parent training, they'll say, well, by high school, it's a little difficult to get them to do things, that kind of thing. So it's interesting to me because of anything, this is where we really need to talk about family standards. You know, what's your value? What's your policy? What are the consequences? So we're working through faith organizations. We don't care about their denomination, their religious beliefs, practices. We're looking at a population level. We've got law enforcement policy. We've got school policy. What is your family policy? And policy seems a little strong, so we're trying to go with standards and really have family take a look at that. Are we talking to kids about the consequences with use of any substance? And then also, what is the consequence? What's going to happen within individual families? What are they comfortable with in terms of setting limits? How will they do that? And hopefully they start to, if they feel like church is a second home to them, as a group, maybe talk collectively, and that begins to change social mode. Kids start to say, oh, my parents are making some changes in terms of how they're addressing or consequences they're making me aware of. And oh my gosh, other kids within the church are getting the same. So we're hoping it will grow that way because it's not working on a public level. It's just at large, random. And then we'll work through our website for those not involved with the church to go along the same lines.
I think what our mentors find many, many times are the issues in the family. The issues that these kids are dealing with at home. And it is significant, really significant.
I agree.
How accurate are these numbers? I was just looking at these for seniors. We have twice as many kids smoking marijuana as using smokeless tobacco, and more kids using marijuana than cigarettes even?
Yes.
Is that accurate?
Starting to see an uptick. Well, think of the confusion. We're surrounded by states that either legalized it.
The other thing you probably got to remember is tobacco is the devil. So, I mean, everybody's been told how bad tobacco is, so that's why you have the e-cigarette and the Juul issue,
yeah,
plus the marijuana, because, well, I'm around younger kids, and I've heard the comment made, getting a lot more trouble with alcohol than I do with marijuana.
And that's true. The legal consequences are much less. Mm-hmm.
Once again, I'm going to say brilliant. brilliant.
Well, yeah, if people underestimate the youth in terms of what they're watching, what they see, those of us that work with them know they could, they'll probably, if we set, turn the city over to them, you'd be surprised what they'd come up with, and then have some level-headed adults help them in terms of what's reasonable, but they see it, and, you know, the concern is, are the mental health issues causing that abuse? You know, if you've got anxiety and depression, and you get a hit of marijuana and say, gosh, I just feel like I can engage. I can sit in the classroom. I'm a little more social with friends. I feel more confident. You know, it reinforces the use. And if parents are using.
Sandy, do you see it in what you guys have dealt with? Have you seen kids that will make those kinds of comments? Is it something they've learned at home, most likely?
Well, yes, and yes. There is a lot of that, and if it's not, they're usually trying to be pretty protective and hide it. But some parents are shutting their eyes, particularly if their kid has a problem with anxiety or depression or ADD or whatever. It's like, well, if it helps, it's better now than it was before. The schools, here's the saddest part. You know, kids will come strung, and I'm talking little ones, kind of strung out because of family issues, and they piece them back together. So by early afternoon, the kids are feeling pretty good about themselves. Maybe they got a clean T-shirt, they were able to eat, that consistency classroom from classroom, and then by 3 o'clock, they're out again. And, you know, the world starts all over for those where there's that type of dysfunction. But I'm telling you, it's not just families with that are apparent dysfunction. We have really great kids in families where the parents aren't parenting. And I mean, they've got money, they're more than capable, they're busy multitasking or building that persona that, you know, everything's okay. I mean, it is one extreme to the other almost. And unfortunately, then those kids in the middle, oftentimes it's, you know, it's the silent majority, same with great parents, silent majority, but they often get overlooked in terms of their abilities, their skills, or the kids that join us in our Drug for Youth events, tears, always tears. You have no idea what it's like to feel left out, because I choose not to drink or eat.
Why is there all the extra anxiety? I mean, the world's not that different. Is it the social media? Or, I mean, do kids not learn to cope because everything's handed to them now? I mean, I've got a young one that I'm worrying about that's going into junior high, high school. I struggled with my stepkids and their ideas and stuff that came along before that. Why are kids having such a hard time coping? Instead of, is it they don't get scolded enough, don't get corrected? So then it's a big deal when they do? Or
is that thing right in front of you?
The telephone?
Absolutely. You can have all kinds of contacts, relationships, and never meet somebody, never have to meet them. You can fire your employee off of that. You can hire a new one and off of that. And same with the kids. Social media is, I'll say it, it's a bane of our civilization as far as social contacts and developing children. And that, that's, like you said, it goes across social economic stratas. It doesn't matter how smart you are, or how much challenged you are in school. We see it a lot in juvenile court.
Are they predisposed, though? I mean, is it, I don't know if you call it intellectual disability, is it mental illness? I mean, is that what it is and they're predisposed to it? Or is it because of what they're dealing with?
There's layers to this. You're talking, yeah, there can be some that physiologically, that's part of their makeup. Environmental plays a part. Social media plays a part. Lack of parenting. Helping kids work through things rather than giving it to them all. Or quick fixes. Let's not make anybody uncomfortable. I certainly grew up with them saying, work through it. You know, figure it out. What are your options? I think we're moving so fast now that people aren't stopping. So that, when I talk to you about second step curriculum, it's the first curriculum I've used where teachers have bought in, school administrators have bought in, the kids have bought in. And it does teach them problem-solving skills that can be used throughout the day. Self-regulation, responsibility, stress management. It's a pretty neat program. LPS kind of, Texas has mandated it for schools throughout the state. LPS is way, they were the ones that initiated, and we helped them get K through 5 and then moved on to middle school. We're waiting for the company to get high school curriculum completed.
I just don't understand it's changed so much. I mean, like, you're a coach, and coaches get pulled into the into the fray trying to solve problems. I just don't understand. I know 30 years ago, 40 years ago, kids weren't coddled along so much. I mean, it was tough deal with it. Kids got to fight on the playground. You dealt with things. I just don't understand. You can see the stress in the kids. I mean,
right.
I don't deny it's there.
Well,
I just don't know
population
why.
Population growth. So we're dealing with many more numbers. And we never had social media. So even some of the bullying that kids are talking about, it isn't physical. That is minimal. It is more either the talking or emotional. And a lot of that happens via social media. And kids know that goes out. That just isn't between a couple people. We have exposed it so that people can live. And look at our news today. And leaders across the country. Things being said. I mean, there's just the boundaries have changed so greatly in the sense of respect and what you say out loud and what you don't say out loud, that self-control, we're very, judgment is accepted. Judging others is looked at as almost a right. And so that causes a lot of, for those on the end getting it. And then other kids will say, I want to support the kids being bullied, but I want them to come after me then. And parents will tell them, you just stay quiet so that they don't come after you if you defend. So it's a really confusing, difficult situation. And that's why I'm hoping the faith partners. We've got 12 congregations. Christina has a large group of women. She, when I started talking to her, she's going to get on board. So Gage, Lancaster's moving with them. I think Gage will be the second pilot. We've got a clergy who's also recovering, and he's worked in the field. Otto Schultz, you might have met him, didn't you? But Dynamo. People adore him. He'll be heavy, and then Derek, who used to work with me, he'll do some of the prevention. We're going to contract with the two of them. So I'm hoping that's a start and that we can really get some stuff going with that. I think it may, those kids that are able to go to church, make them feel safer, and those people that aren't going to churches, our website, we're really hoping to do more outreach with them.
Well, the good thing is Region 5 is helping us move forward to deal with these issues, recognizing that we have them. Too often, none of us want to admit that we have these problems, and so they'll just go away if they are our family. But Region 5 is working hard to help. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for your time. This is important for us to know that you hear it and know that it's happening. And, any way we can support you. And Christina's great to work with. And we're building on her staff.
As your representative, I am the chairman of this board, so I'm trying to do my best.
Yes, you are.
They tell me what to do. I'll have to go up and spend the afternoon tomorrow signing contracts.
Gary?
Yeah, so one question.
Sure.
I don't remember which program it was you were talking about, but you were talking about teachers getting trained in it.
Yes, All-Stars.
Yeah, so what, and this is going to sound terrible, but what's the benefit in it for the teachers? Are they going to get compensation for it, or this is why I ask. My wife's a kindergarten teacher, so I understand the teacher side of things a little bit. They're already pretty loaded. Teachers are loaded with a lot of stuff.
Yes.
A lot of them are. But some of them can handle extra. But my concern is that putting another thing on their plate, if they're already loaded, what's in it for them? You know, if they don't see it as something for them, are they going to be good? Are they going to be good in that program?
I think you're right on, Gary, and we are seeing that compassion fatigue. I'm doing more of that training with teachers, particularly the good ones that get stretched so thin.
Yep.
So I think you make a really good point. I think with the Partnership for Success funds that are coming into K-12, about $20,000 for the next four, $20,000 for the next 4 years each year. If we have those two programs going, I think we can put some towards, I'll run that past the state, to see if we can reimburse those teachers to keep that moving. The problem is with schools, if we start reimbursing teachers or start getting substitutes, then they're like, if it goes, if the funding goes away, so does the programming.
Right.
So we'll look at that. Maybe even if it's federal block grant, maybe if we change something around where not so much goes into teammates.
And I don't know, maybe in that teacher group that you work with, maybe they'd have something that they would see as important,
right,
that, other than money. You know, maybe it's something different than monetary. Maybe it's, who knows what. But
right.
I mean, there's some way to get them to buy in on it.
I agree. Thanks for saying that. I totally agree with you.
Anything else for Sandy? Thank you for coming.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Sandy.
We'll take a 5-minute recess at 9:51 on the clock. Call the meeting back to order. Call the meeting back to order at 9:55 on the clock by direction of Supervisor Juergens. Next on the agenda, Nicole Stoner, Extension Educator. She'll give us a extension update. Would this be a quarterly report or just an update? Nicole, one of her gifts is she's always very quick, too.
I am. I don't want to take your time too much. You know, I know you guys are busy people.
Hey, efficient.
I am efficient. I've been busy out at the Extension Office, of course. I just finished my ninth season of Yard and Garden Live. It's about 4,500 listeners per show that we have on average. I had 197 calls from 60 different towns, 10 of them in Kansas. Mm. On the 18 shows, I averaged 11 calls per show, and one had 18 questions for that one show, so that was a good show. So we've been busy with that, and we're working to maybe add to that next year, maybe a little bit of a fall component with Yard and Garden, so always looking to improve. And it's a fun show. I just really enjoy doing it, and everybody likes it. Everybody that I talk to, I guess, most of them like listening to the show. So I did want to kind of toot my own horn, I guess. I went to Indiana a couple weeks ago for the National Association of County Agricultural Agents meeting, and I was selected as the Achievement Award winner for Nebraska. So you can have this so you can see that.
Thank you.
So they pick an Achievement Award winner. It's for those in the first like 10 years of their career. So I got that award this year. So just wanted to make you aware that we're trying and we're doing what we can to get out there and let people know what we're doing. So in 4-H, of course, we had the successful fair in July, which was great. We had over 200 volunteers, youth and adults. Market Livestock Premium Auction had record donations of over $60,000 for nearly 100 4-H and FFA exhibitors. So that was that's a really good thing for those youth to participate in and build for new market beef or maybe a college scholarship in that manner. Then we went to the Nebraska State Fair, had 186 static exhibits from Gage County 4-H members. We had 3 purples in the fashion show, 1 blue ribbon for dairy judging contest, and 1 Gage County 4-H'er, he received first place in the senior tree ID contest, second place in senior horticulture judging contest, and he is now going to be on the Nebraska team for the national horticulture judging contest in Nebraska in October. So they're actually doing it in Nebraska this year, which is really great for the team. They don't have to travel too far, so One of our very own, Jeffrey Losey, is going to be participating in that. So does very well with the plant ID and all of that. So it's fun to see that. You'll see on the back, these are the 4-H youth development, just kind of our the growth goals that they set last year. So we increased our enrollment by I could read this.
35% increase.
Thank you. I was looking for it. I was like, I know it's on here somewhere. Yes, 35% increase because part of that is because in 2018 we didn't enroll Clover Kids and we do now. So that was a big jump in our numbers because of those Clover Kids, which is the kids that are under that 4-H age. So that's 5 to 7. And then 8 to 18 would be our traditional 4-H age. Got a good amount of kiddos coming through the 4-H program, which is really good. Had a 35% increase in the enrollment. We've done the kickoff, 4-H kickoff, the social media marketing, some 4-H related events, and different things like that. Had a lot of blast programs and got 3 new Gage County 4-H clubs this last year. So that was really good. So spent $760 on recruitment events, which is great. And so we're just moving forward with the 4-H program, doing what we can to build that.
For people who might not understand, will you tell what a Clover Kid is?
Yeah, those are the kids that are the 5 to 7. So they're not yet 4-H age, because the Nebraska, well, it's the national 4-H program, only recognizes kids 8 to 18 for the traditional 4-H programming. And so then they also, the National 4-H recognizes ages 5 to 7 as Clover Kids, and it's a just a participation. So it gets them into it, you know, big brothers and big sisters are bringing them along anyway. They learn a little bit, and they can present, like, some smaller projects at the fair, and they get a ribbon. It's a participation ribbon, but they love it, and they get to do that. And some of the smaller animals they can show, like the... this year they did it different. They did Pee-wee, so that's good.
So it's neat to involve the younger kids. The younger you can get them involved, the more they'll get active as they get older. So that's
right.
Fantastic. And it's great for agriculture.
Right.
Fantastic
right.
For agriculture.
Yeah. So we had a lot of them come through, and they really enjoy the programs. Tara has been busy. She's working with statewide extension professionals to develop and publish an electric multi-cooker, which is Instapot. So we don't like to use the trade name, but easier to figure out that way. But she's working on curriculum for promotion through the National Extension Organization. So hopefully they'll have that curriculum done by end of November. And then she did a nutrition program for Black Hills employees at their in-service. Teach them some stuff, had 25 there. She did Kids in the Kitchen during the summer school program at Beatrice Public Schools. Had 2 different groups in a 1-week course and about 10 to 15 per group. And they learned how to prepare simple, healthy snacks, safe and easy way for them and their families. So that's always fun. Tara is now trained to do the Go Knapsack training with child care providers. So they do like a training, and then she works with them, I think, for a year after on improving the health of young children. So the training and all of that is offered for key topics like healthy eating, physical activity, and oral health. So that works with like daycare providers. And helps that. And then she's also now certified to do the ServSafe program to provide food safety training to food handlers in Gage, Jefferson, Johnson, Nemaha, Pawnee, Richardson, and Saline counties. So because of the ServSafe program, you can trust that where you're eating out is prepared safely. And
then you make this information available to providers, child care providers, so they know this is available?
Yep,
okay.
Yep. She advertises for it and I think sends out some information to the groups about that.
Good.
And I just wanted to, I guess, formally invite you all, if you like.
More paper.
I know, sorry. I know, and I'm a horticulturist. I'm a tree person and I keep printing stuff, but... we're having an open house. So this is the 150th year anniversary of the University of Nebraska. And so we're having the N150 display will be in the library the Beatrice Library from October, I think it comes the 7th, that Monday, through the maybe 18th. It's a couple weeks where it's here. And so with that display, we're going to do an open house and just kind of talk about different things that we do through Extension. I'm going to have a couple master gardeners there to kind of talk about that program. I know they'll be there with the 4-H stuff, and I think Tara will be there with some fun activity about healthy eating, I think. So should be a good time. So if you guys are available and want to come, feel free. We're going to have, like, prizes and fun stuff. So.
Free? We like free.
It's free, and I think we're going to maybe have some cookies.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So.
And this big red M stands for knowledge, right? It's
correct.
Not anything else.
No, it's knowledge, yeah. You betcha.
You guys know how to spell knowledge? With a K. We do it with an M.
Well, you know, it's Nebraska.
Yes. We got to
right?
Improvise once in a while.
Well, I'll echo that. I still like listening to Yard and Gardening in your show, too. It's another nice way to just, you know, make that connection between Extension and, celebration like this. Just any exposure you have, it's one more way to get the kids involved with 4-H or the community involved with Extension. And you have three trained people out there paid by the state now, paid by the university. That's great. And, of course, some county support there, too. So mm-hmm. We appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
And your radio programs are wonderful, Nicole. Those are really great.
They're fun to do.
That's how I learned how to cut my asparagus. Make sure I leave it in the ground, you know.
Asparagus? What's that?
Just another healthy thing I eat.
See, exactly. It's delicious.
any other questions for Nicole? All right. No, thank you very much.
You guys have a good one.
Thank you, Nicole.
Up next, approve or disapprove resolution for signing of the County Annual Certification of Program Compliance for, is that Form 2019 or for 2019?
Oh, well, could be either one.
I think
it's Form 2019, but I don't know.
Move approved. Moved by Lytle, second by Jergens. Any discussion? Seeing none, vote. 5 in favor. Approve or disapprove County Annual Certification of Program Compliance Form.
Move to approve. Second.
Moved by Lytle, second by Jergens. Any discussion? Vote. 5 in favor. Motion carries. Discussion on settlement agreement with NERMA on property damage hail of $75,991.02 on the detention center roof. Discussion on settlement.
We just have to make sure the public is aware that we received a settlement from.
We received a check in the amount of $75,991.02. It's my understanding that the total bill for the reconstruction over on the roof for the damage would have been that plus $1,000, which was our deductible. We accepted that, so the roof is on. We paid the $1,000 deductible, I believe, 2 weeks ago. And is there any, I mean, the roof was paid for by insurance?
Yeah, basically, this interpretation of the law, which I don't have any problem with at all, basically a disclosure to the public. We advertised for construction on it. That's what we got. So it's just a matter of public disclosure that this is completely collected, and that's what we did with the money.
And I believe there's some additional work that had to be done to meet city code. That was done and also paid for by the insurance company. Is there anything else for the good of the order? Seeing none, I'd ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by Lytle, second by Jergens. Vote. We are adjourned at 10:08 on the clock.
Terry.
Terry. Terry.